I'm Jim.
I'm Kendall.
And this is a very powerful medium.
It is?
No.
From one of the bedrooms in Jim Tofty's house, it's The Fake Show, starring Kendall Tenney and Jim Tofty.
Jeff Howard, Jeffrey K. Howard, welcome to the show. It's been a long time since I've had... What the last time we talked? Was it January?
Well, your Christmas tree was still up, so it's finally gone.
Well, that could have been February.
Yes, and I like your new studio. There's much more light in here than the last
yes,
one.
Yes, a lot has happened, including, and unfortunately, the passing of Leonard Nimoy.
Yes. And I remember seeing Leonard on Piers Morgan, you know, maybe a year ago, and he was on there talking about his condition, his pulmonary condition.
Right.
And as someone who's a lifelong asthmatic, you know, I can't get health insurance for respiratory illnesses. And I know he was in poor health. It was, you know, 83. You know, he had a good long life.
So he knew his time was limited
he
did Piers Morgan show.
Yeah, he did. He was tweeting things about his, you know, these philosophical, really nice tweets, you know, kind of like Leonard Nimoy is just a tremendous influence on me and my life and Star Trek from being a 12-year-old kid with an old RCA Selectivision VCR, you know, top loading, sitting there recording off Fox 5 all the Star Trek episodes. And I was obsessed with cutting commercials. So I was cutting commercials out of the Star Trek. I wish I kept the commercials. Those are the most interesting thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you think that people were a little bit rough on William Shatner because he didn't make it to the funeral?
It's complicated. You know, he was there for a charity event. It was a big deal, and nobody plans this kind of thing. And I think he tried everything, and he even posted about people like, wait a minute, you're a celebrity, you can take a private jet. He was saying it was like $40,000 to fly across the country, and people were criticizing him. So I think if he could be there, he would have. You know, I think there's more to it than he's saying, but I think he's really upset that he couldn't make it, and he was obligated.
They did have like a complicated relationship, though, didn't they?
They did. I think, but in the final years, every celebrity that had trouble, they always make up, you know, in the twilight of the years. And, you know, look at Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis and Abbott and Costello. There's always these famous pairs that, you know, just and towards the end of life going, you know what, you know, we were stupid, we were young. It's like, I think they were really close friends in the last 10, 20 years.
Now, you had a chance, you brought a clip with you. You had a chance to sit down with Leonard Nimoy at the time he was appearing in the J.J. Abrams version of Star Trek.
The first one, the reboot. And I remember when I got invited to that junket, and my best friend in the world, Tony Toscano, who's the talking pictures out of Salt Lake City, he's a film critic I've known for 25 years. We got invited and we called each other and we were just giddy because he was involved with Creation, which is the conventions that did all the Star Trek conventions for the last 30, 40 years. And he was involved with that. When we got there, there were so many cast members in the new Star Trek reboot. They had to split up the critics into two groups. Group A got Chris Pine and the new Spock and the director. And I didn't get that. I got Group B, which got Chekhov and Sulu. And I got we went down. I was so upset. I'm like, you're getting the new Captain Kirk. You're getting the new Spock. And then I looked on my list and there was Leonard Nimoy in Group B.
Nice.
And that made up for everything. I couldn't care less about anything else. I am going to sit down 5 or 6 minutes with Leonard Nimoy. I was a nervous wreck. And you never know how these guys are going to be. He was like your uncle. And I was born September 6th. 1966, and Star Trek premiered September 8th, 1966. So I just feel like I was in this Star Trek zone.
Let's go into that clip now, because the portion of the clip we have is where you bring that up to him, and here we go.
I'm the ultimate Star Trek fan. I was born the week and the month and the year the original series came out.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so...
September 66?
I'm September 6th is when I was born, yeah, so...
Two or three days before you went on the air.
Exactly, so I really have an attachment to the original series.
That's a great story.
And what was in the script that you thought that you had to come back to Spock one more time here? At least, was there something...
These people, J.J. Abrams and his writers, Orson and Kurtzman, I think really had a sense of what the character could be about. And although the origins of Spock have been dealt with in the series and in some of the other films, never quite told as effectively as they do in this movie.
Are you satisfied with this brand new legacy of Star Trek that it'll touch all new fans that have never seen or even familiar with the original show?
I would think so. It's a great thrill ride, but it's also got these wonderful characters and how they come together to work as a team. I think it's very touching.
You know, I used to go to all the conventions, and is this something you still enjoy to meet fans?
The conventions are great. I think of the conventions like taking a victory lap. You show up and people adore you and they stand and they cheer and they scream. And they yell, they laugh at your jokes. You know, it's like having a bunch of grandchildren around that really love you. It's great.
I thought it was also great what he had to say about Star Trek conventions and how he really was a big fan of
it. Not only he was a big fan, it's funny they always use Shatner in Saturday Night Live and always use him as a scapegoat to, you know, the poke fun between the fans and the cast members. But Leonard Nimoy, he was always, never had anything bad said about him. And he always loved the fans. And he also praised Las Vegas. I couldn't believe he loved Las Vegas. And he said it twice in the interview. What a great town. And I from that point on, I was like, wow, we're going to have a really good interview.
Well, thanks for letting us use that clip. And I've got one more. This should be interesting to you. And he talks about how, or he talked about the origins of the Spock character and how this guy really should act. And he got that by just getting a little note from one of the producers who said he thought that he should be a little more detached than most humans.
But I remember, I think it was the very first episode we were filming after the pilot when we started into production, that there was a scene in which the ship was being threatened and there was a lot of activity on the ship. The captain is saying, do such and such, press this button, do this, warp three, get us out of here, and so forth. Other people are reacting and scurrying around. But Spock had one word to say, and the word was fascinating. And the director said, gave me a brilliant note, and said, be different, be the scientist, be detached. See it as something that's a curiosity rather than a threat. Thank you. I said, fascinating. Well, a big chunk of the character was born right there. And when the producers and writers would see that kind of thing happen in the film the next day, they would start to write to that.
All right, so there you have it. That's a little bit of Leonard Nimoy. Can't believe how many people commented on this on social media.
It exploded. Yeah. It really did. Even President Obama, you know, weighed in on it. So I think...
Well, they've got the same ears. I think that's why.
That's true. You just don't realize, you know, how a character and someone could just inspire someone their entire lives. I mean, here's an actor and a character that I've known my entire life. Never been a time in my life without Spock.
All right, so this weekend's new release. I know that you had gone, and this movie, Chappie, was, I've seen so many trailers of this movie, I think more than most over the past year. Tell us about the director, because it's what, District 9?
Yeah, Neil Blomkamp, District 9 was one of those science fiction films that either fans hated or loved.
Yeah.
I was one of those guys that loved it. I think I've seen it 15 times. It was such an amazing film. So I couldn't wait to see what he was going to do again. And Chappie was set in Johannesburg again, and it just has the same feel as District 9, which I'm sure was on purpose, but it seemed like it was before the aliens arrived. So Chappie is essentially a robot that is being built by this organization that's run by Sigourney Weaver, and Hugh Jackman's one of the engineers, and Dave Patel. And they're building these robots to be almost like policemen. So they're sending out these robots, and it's almost like iRobot. Remember that movie?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm gonna say a lot of movies you remember.
Yeah.
So they're building these police robots, and one of the engineers is like, look, I've discovered how to give a program to give it consciousness, to think. Of course, the robot falls in the hands of some gangsters who want to train it to, of course, to rob, to steal, to murder. And so Chappie starts out exactly as a child. It has to be educated. And as the movie progresses, he
becomes... Like E.T.
Exactly. Oh, there! Yeah. I didn't even think of E.T.
Yeah.
So E.T., Short Circuit, iRobot, RoboCop. I mean, you can just put the best of all these robot movies we've seen, and he just throws them in there and doesn't do it very well. And doesn't do it very well at all. Yeah, so no. Especially with Hugh Jackman, who's using Ed 209 from RoboCop. You're just sitting there going, it's the same design, it's the same purpose, this really big industrial, you know, military machine. And Jackman plays this disgruntled engineer because nobody wants his big monster Ed 209 type robot to go out there and patrol things. It's impersonal, it's huge, it's expensive. We want the friendly Chappie looking one who wants to come up to us and say, hello, can I help you? And all of that kind of stuff. So it just failed on every level. And because it just reminded me of too many other movies that didn't have its own identity. And you want Chappie to begin having its own character. And most of the movie, he just mimics people.
Was it a sweet comedy?
It was a dull robot movie. You know, I wanted more for it. It's being really pushed. It's been a lot of publicity around it, but I think it's going to just die a quick death.
All right. This movie, The Kingsman, I've heard good things. I've heard that it's, you speak of action, it's supposed to be really awesome.
Yes, tremendous action. And we have essentially how super agents become super agents and British Secret Service. But this is like The Kingsman. They're even more secretive than MI. Is that MI6? So we find out that they recruit different types of military or highly educated kids to come in there and train them in their own way. And not only just because of the action and being super spies, but also in British kind of culture. So we have Michael Caine who heads the whole thing. So it gives it a really
nice
a touch of class and some credibility. But it's also how they dress and how they, the manners. And it's also, it's really how to be an English gentleman, but also be one of the most badass kind of super agents you can think of. So the action is amazing in terms of its choreography. It's almost like watching The Matrix at times. And it's funny. And there's going to be tremendous sequels. And Samuel Jackson is a super villain who has to talk with a lisp the whole time. really kind of gets annoying. So it's almost turns out to be like an Austin Powers. Just think Austin Powers meets James Bond.
Yeah. I've heard don't bring the little kids.
No, don't. Because you watch the trailer, you watch the commercial for the movie, and it looks like, you know, a fun-filled family romp, which it's not, because it does have some serious action in it, and it's kind of... it's for adults only.
All right. But it's good. You loved it.
I loved it. It's good. Good. Very good. Much.
The movie Focus. That's another one that's gotten a lot of attention.
Yes. Terrible attention. You know, I love Will Smith. I really do. He's great on Jimmy Fallon. I love his movies. I love iRobot.
It's been tough for him the last few years.
And he just cannot find his groove. Oh. And this is a movie where he plays a con artist, you know, a grifter that's going. It's like The Sting. If you're going to remake The Sting, he orchestrates.
Remake it with Jackie Gleason and Mac Davis, I say.
That's Sting 2, by the way. I like Sting 2. At least I did when I remember I saw it originally. Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. So when you have Will Smith trying to be the Jackie Gleason or the Paul Newman of the group, they go to like New Orleans during the Super Bowl, and they have the scams going on, you know, so they're lifting wallets, they're lifting watches, they're finding rich guys, and they're doing scams and like that. And so the first hour of the movie, they're setting all this up. And of course, they do the big score. You know, they go down to, I think it's Rio. They're doing the racing, Formula One racing,
right,
where they're going to get this program that's going to do some sort of fuel efficiency. So it's about Will Smith going down there and getting close to the guy that did the program. He's going to sell it to all the different drivers. It just becomes a second movie that makes no sense. And I couldn't stand Will Smith in this. I really couldn't. He has this one monotone demeanor. And they just announced the casting for Independence Day 2, which he passed on, which I think was a big mistake.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw that.
I think he should just, you know, call them up because Focus failed. It really did. It died at the box office again.
Wow.
And I'm the only critic who liked After Earth with him and his son. I liked it. Nobody else did. So that bombed, tremendous bomb too. So he has really bad publicity around him right now. He's box office poison. Can you believe? But
what about Margot Robbie, though? Because she was supposed to be something that would save that movie.
The chemistry between him and her was terrible. She's beautiful. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But he's just not a sexy leading man. I didn't see it. You know, he's not like a Hemsworth or someone where you're just
like
gonna,
a Cary Grant type.
Something like that.
They were going to. Well, okay. Now, this is a movie. Here's a movie. Let's finish with this one that I figured wasn't going to be good. Unfinished Business. What do you say?
No one is a bigger fan of Vince Vaughn than I am. I love his delivery. I love his shtick. I've met him many times. He's a great guy. Hmm. And I watched The Internship again the other day with him and Owen Wilson, where
loved
they go to
it.
Google. I did too.
Love that.
It's because, you know, he talks really fast. Right? And look, I'm thinking right here. Wait. You know, he does that Vince Vaughn energy that just, and then you have Owen Wilson who does it right back, you know, go with it. And it's really funny. And then when you're watching Unfinished Business, you have, you have Franco and Tom Wilkinson. You have this classically trained actor.
It's Dave Franco, right?
Dave Franco. Yeah, not James. Yeah. It's Dave Franco. What it essentially is, he's running some consulting firm. He gets fired. He hires those two guys. It's a year later. They're going after this big account that's life or death for their business. And they keep getting jerked around. So they have to fly to St. Louis. They have to fly to Berlin. And they have to keep chasing. And all the while, their original firm is also going after it, plays by James Marsden, who's like trying to put up every roadblock you can think of. Franco, who's mentally retarded of some degree, so you can't understand why he's in this movie and doing business presentations. That doesn't make sense. He's a virgin. And every time he sees breasts or something, he acts like Chappy. You know, this little kid that got old after a while. And then Wilkinson, who wants a divorce after 40 years, keeps hiring prostitutes to come to his room, but not to have sex, but just role play in like maid's outfits. You just don't feel for any of these characters. It's just a blender of all these different ideas that you just say, wait a minute, a lot of this ended up on the cutting room floor because nothing is making sense. I was super disappointed. I love you, Vince, but you really bombed on this one.
All right. With all the ones we've talked about, Chappie, no. Unfinished Business, no.
No.
Focus? No. Kingsman.
The Kingsman,
yes.
Which I would say yes.
Yeah, good.
And then there's big buzz on some other films coming up too, like Cinderella. I heard some really big things about Cinderella coming out next week and a couple weeks from now. I talked to some critics who saw it in LA, and they said, yes, we know it's Cinderella, and we've heard the story, but Disney really does the royal treatment with it. So this is getting huge buzz on that. So
that's what I've heard.
Yeah, so I can't wait to see that.
Well, thank you for coming by, Jeff Howard.
Sure.
VegasFilmCritic.com is where you want to go for more information, and people can follow you on Twitter and
Twitter,
all
Facebook,
that stuff.
Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, I'm all there.
Perfect.
Thank you.
And remember to get on our email list at thefakeshow.com. Look for updates on upcoming episodes and where we might be recording our next podcast at The Fake Show Facebook page or on Twitter.
The Fake Show is filmed in front of a live studio audience. Talk with all your friends at thefakeshow.com.
Thank you.